And statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
It ain't the destination. No, it's about the journey. It ain't where you're headed, but it's how you grow. It ain't about the trophies, but getting back on your feet, walking in your glory. So come on, let's go. It's time for Michelle Speak. Yes, it is. Michelle Speak.
Good afternoon, 860 AM listeners. This is your host, Michelle Lawrence, or Michelle Speaks, and I am so excited to have yet another hour with you today to discuss one of the four W's: worth, wealth, wellness, and wisdom. But we're going to get this show started the way we always do, and that is acknowledging the one who's made it all possible. And we are going to lead with scripture. And today's scripture comes from Philippians, the 4th chapter, the 8th verse, and I'll be reading the NIV. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatsoever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. I'm also going to read the KJV. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. I've just read for you Philippians, the 4th chapter, the 8th verse. May the Lord add a blessing to the reading and hearing of his word. This is my absolute favorite scripture in the Bible, because it forces me, and it should force you, to reconcile what am I thinking about and what am I focused on. Throughout our day, we are always challenged with whether or not something is right. We are always challenged with how we make better decisions. We are challenged with folks that we're going to interact with. And sometimes these challenges can become unnerving and frustrating. And so what pulls me back in is to say, is it the truth? That's the first decision I need to make, because if it's not the truth, then why am I giving it credence? The second thing is it honest? And am I being honest? So when I'm making decisions or being pulled into a decision, the first thing we have to determine is I need to make sure I'm going to be true to who he's called me to be and be honest. Then it says whatsoever things are just. Now, we can talk about living in an unjust world, but our actions are still our actions. And so are we participating in the injustices, or are we actually doing things to uphold justice? So we need to determine, is it just whatever we're being asked to do? And then it says, whatsoever things are lovely. If we can't be a part of something that is life or giving life or uplifting, we certainly shouldn't be participating in something that's about someone's destruction or demise. And then it says, if there be any virtue or if there be any praise, think on such things. So we think, so we speak, so we behave. And if we don't get our thoughts wrapped around the things that would lift us, encourage us, and cause us to move forward, then our thoughts cause us to become stagnant, or quite frankly, that we will revert to old behaviors. Govern what you're thinking. There's a lot happening right now where society projects who we are. And today's subject about what's going on is about projection, about who our black men are and what they stand for. And so I am encouraging them today to think about the things that are true about who you are, regardless of what people are saying, to remember that you were fearfully and wonderfully made, that you do have virtue and there are good reports about you. Those are the things that make you who you are. As we enter into today's session, What's Going On, there is no more appropriate song than What's Going On by Marvin Gaye.
Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer. For only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
We have just heard Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, and even as I listen to the lyrics, it says picket signs and picket lines, don't punish me with brutality, talk to me so I can see what's going on. You would think that this was written today as opposed to 30 plus years ago. I got Kevin saying yeah, but just in the language, he's not talking about the 70s, which is, I must say, almost 40 years ago. This is applicable today. And so we're going to jump right into today's conversation about what's going on. And as I already shared with Facebook Live, in the studio with me today is none other than Marcus Allen. He is the CEO of Big Brother Big Sisters Independence Region. In April 2013, he became the first African American CEO in the organization's Independence Region. For three consecutive years, he has significantly grown the agency by increasing the number of children served, revenue, donors, programs, and visibility. Today, he manages the largest one-to-one mentoring program in the Commonwealth and the second largest Big Brother Big Sisters agency in the nation. Well done. Well done. He's sitting there looking so humble, like, is that me? Yes, that's you. So glad to have you back with us, Marcus. Thank you so
Michelle.
Much for being here. And this brother, Kevin Covington. If you ever had a brother, then Kevin would be him. But let me tell you, he is the coach with the Center for Male Engagement, a recruitment and retention program for African-American males at the Community College of Philadelphia. He works with African-American males of various backgrounds who seek to obtain their associate's degree or program certification at CCP. Kevin has facilitated several workshops on strategies for recruiting and retaining African-American males in higher education, and as much as I smile and laugh, I get such joy over the work he's doing with our young black men. It is much needed. His voice, his skill, his talent, and I'm so glad to have him back as well. Glad
Thank
to have you together.
Michelle. Thank you.
And so we're going to jump right in today. There are so many things that I learned during this race, and one of the pieces that, Kevin, you know, that I thought was hugely important to me is to understand the state of the African-American man and where and what was important to them and how to get their voice and their vote out, quite frankly. Post-election, I am still gravely concerned about, you know, black men mattering, right? I know we've got Black Lives Matter, even as I was thinking about this title, I'm like, I need black men to know they matter. And so I want to have some discussion with the two of you around the state your perspective on the state of the black man. And so if we look at this, what is your opinion on the state of the black man today? And I'll start with you, Kevin.
Oh, okay. It's funny because anytime we say something like that, we tend to think, especially now, we tend to think nationally, you know, what's going on in D.C.
Right.
But it's really just a microcosm of what's going on really locally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's key that you said something about black men mattering. That's the first step.
Wow.
You got to know that you really matter. You got to know that somebody really cares about you. A colleague of mine once said, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Mm-hmm.
And over and over and over again in different areas, black men have either been removed forcibly
mm-hmm.
or just moved to the side strategically.
Mm.
Whether you look at what's going on in the criminal justice system, where they seem to be very welcomed, unfortunately.
Right. Pipeline,
in
fact.
Yes, absolutely, right? Absolutely. Or if you just look at college campuses. When I was thinking about just the concept of the show, I'm thinking the fundamental aspects of life, black men have already been, these things have been impacted by race. So if we look at a housing, education, employment, health and wellness, depending on who you are
mm-hmm.
and depending on what your race is, that'll depend on what level of service you're going to get.
Mm.
So my zip code will then determine what my schools are,
right.
which then will determine my future in terms of employment,
right.
which then can have an impact on me health and wellness because now I'm stressed.
Right.
I live in 19122, 191, whatever,
mm-hmm.
and it's high crime or it's high this. My schools aren't great. The employment opportunities aren't there. I have to work 2-3 jobs to provide for my family, and I'm not there for them,
mm-hmm.
which has a stress upon me.
Mm-hmm.
But that same young man, if he's given an opportunity, can really impact his family in a positive way
mm-hmm.
if those things are taken care of. If you, when you create a program, when you're doing these things, you really consider what black men need. And too often, people have thought about just everyone else but the black man.
Wow. Wow. Marcus.
Well, yeah, I agree with Kevin. I think he made some great points. The only thing I'll add to that, you know, we ask, do the black man matter? I sometimes wonder, does our society have the patience to ask black men, you know, what matters to them,
mm.
right? Because oftentimes, you know, we're emasculated, and they go to the black woman to tell society about who the black man is. And when a black man starts to speak, people, particularly the majority, take over that conversation. If you even look at Colin Kaepernick, right?
Mm.
And people, they tend to, when a black man speaks, they have to interpret it in a way that they're comfortable with. They can't just listen to it at face value. I think the other thing, too, you know, we always say it starts at home. And I think we live in a society where it's not politically correct for the black man to come out and say, hey, listen, like, we're going to do something for black men.
Mm.
Oftentimes, and I know I'll get slapped for this,
there's
going to be some woman who's going to stand up and say, but don't forget about the black woman.
Right.
And we never forget about the black woman. Like, we know the black woman is the cradle of civilization, mm. right? We know we have to protect, provide, and profess, you know, our love to the black woman.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be a time when we can just say, let's focus for a moment. And let's make sure that we undergird these black boys and black men.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of whatever else is going on, we have to get the man showing. Mm-hmm. There was a study that was just recently done by Stanford and Harvard. And you probably saw this, where it juxtaposed a black family who's raising a boy who has $1 million in income or above,
mm-hmm.
right, in their household, versus a white boy who's raised in a household of $35,000 or less. And that white boy raised in a household of $35,000 less had the same chances of going to prison as that black boy that came from $1 million household,
mm.
right?
Wow.
And then when they juxtaposed the black girl against the white girl, they were very similar, right? So it really showed the disparity that happens in this country when you don't change the race. You just change the gender
mm.
of a minority person, right? And this system is bent on – And I think it's intentional. You know, I really think it's intentional of taking the black man out of his community. That same study also showed that even if young kids are raised in a community that there's no father figure in the household, mm-hmm. but there are father figures in that community, mm-hmm. that kid has a better chance of being successful. Right. So it's not saying that male figure has to be in the household, but long as there are men who grew up in that community,
right.
or kids grew up in a community full of men, they do better.
Mm.
But we don't experience that because many of our men are in jail.
Right.
Right? When you have almost half the population that has African-American men in that prison, then they took them from somewhere.
Right.
And there's going to be a negative impact on our kids and our community as long as that continues.
And so as I'm listening to both of you to talk about it being systemic and that it is oftentimes projected on you what matters to black men,
right,
or
right.
someone is speaking on your behalf without even consultation, right?
Right.
You know, let me just tell you what's important to you, Gavin.
Right.
Hold on.
Right.
I got this. So, you know, welcome to my show. I'm going to tell all the black men what matters to them. And as much as we're smiling, how does that make you feel? You know, what is that? You know, I know you said that it oftentimes can't, I'm not going to put words. How does that make you feel?
Well, I'll say, first and foremost, I want to be clear to your listeners. Like, we can't speak for all black men.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And the black man is just so diverse.
Yes.
In thought and background, where we come from. I've met some of the most interesting black men
mm-hmm.
from all over the world.
Absolutely.
Right? And
absolutely.
So we're so different. But, you know, and we have to be very careful, too, because, you know, the three of us tend to work in communities where there is a lack of resources, where, you know, it's low income. And so we're dealing with a different type of circumstance that's affecting the type of black men that I think we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think the world has to be ready for not every black man has a father who went to prison or a family member who's in prison or who's addicted to crack or from a single parent household. Right.
I would agree with you. What I would pause, are there some commonalities that whether you were born in the projects or if you have access to greater resources, my father used to travel, and because he would cross a county line. Now, he wasn't in a hoopty, he was in a brand new car, and oftentimes in a three-piece suit, because
right.
he was a director at a college, but nothing stopped them from pulling him over
mm-hmm. right.
all
Absolutely.
The time to say, what are you doing?
Right.
You know, what,
right.
can I see your license and your registration? So there are some things that while income, right,
mm-hmm.
and lifestyle may say I don't have it as frequently or I don't have the same storyline, it doesn't mean I don't have the same experience. And I also take that back to our former president who says, I remember before I was the president, people following me around.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely.
The store. So I get that we are certainly not speaking for all black men, and that there are populations that have different experiences. I'm asking just, and so that my listeners hear, from your perspective.
Right, right.
So that we're not labeling mm-hmm. all.
Absolutely. And that was my point, Michelle. Just,
yeah.
You know, just, it's because sometimes in our current environment, we have a tendency to generalize.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and those Fair of enough. Us who are educated, who understand that, and many of your listeners do as well, but I just want to make it clear so people don't say, oh, they, you know, we're putting black men in the same plate or what have you. But I agree with you. I think, you know, regardless of where we come from, the outside perspective is going to see us the same way.
Yeah.
And that's why we as black men have to be very careful in the messages that we put out about
right.
us.
Mm-hmm.
And that we also have to set examples of what leadership means in the black community,
mm-hmm.
where that we're not going to compromise who we are and the people who are looking up to us. So Kevin and I, we have a platform that may be a little bit greater than some and less than others, but we have to use that platform to be very honest about what is going on with us? How do we
yeah.
see the world? We have to, you know, pull our Malcolm Jenkins card, right? I think
right.
Malcolm's a good friend of mine, and I think what he has done has shown that, you know, before career,
yes.
before reputation, before, you know, all the negative things that people say, you should be quiet and not say much, keep
mm-hmm.
your head low and just keep making your money, keep playing the sport. Like, we as black men have to reach out and say, listen, what's happening to us isn't right.
Right.
Right. And that we see it And more importantly, we are willing to do something about it, and we're going to use our voices to do that. We're going to galvanize and work with each other to accomplish more for our community.
Yeah. Kevin?
Definitely commonalities. But, you know, you ask anybody who has two brothers, they're raising two sons, in the same household, you could have just two black males, and they're so completely different. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of experiencing that myself with my two boys. But the commonalities are, once you step out here, like you said, besides the job, besides whatever you're wearing or whatever, there are a different set of rules because you're a black male. And it's largely because we haven't dealt with the problem of race, with the issue of race. Race is a social construct that really has nothing to do with, has nothing to say about us. But we haven't solved that issue. And we keep building on this weak foundation and wondering why it's sagging on one side and wondering why it's not doing what it needs to do and just kind of get over it and get past it. Well, you can't. Mm. We've got literally generations of people who have been mistreated, and they teach that to their children. And then on the other side, the mistreaters who continue to say, treat them differently because they are differently, because they are different. And In working with black men, the challenge with trying to put this one thing on them is that we keep treating black men like they're this monolith, like it solves everybody. And if you take five men of different races or different ethnicities from New York and then some from Chicago, they would have more in common with each other based on geography than race. So the black guy may have something very much in common with a black guy, both born in Brooklyn because they had the same experience, as opposed to just putting him in a room with a black guy from Idaho or Cincinnati or whatever.
Right.
We tend to kind of think, oh, because you guys are black, you must know each other.
Right.
You guys family. Got things.
You're right.
You know, it's like, you got to be. But it's what's going on in that geographic experience that makes you together. And then what are some of the issues, some of the challenges you're having? Because we can't just put – the challenges we have in Philadelphia are a lot different than the challenges they may have in any southern city, and we know that. But we tend to think, let's just give black men jobs and everything will be all right. Working, filling a box at Amazon may feed you immediately, but it has no impact generationally. So I still have to work that part-time job and this part-time job. But, oh, by the way, my education was kind of shaky, so I'm not quite there. Oh, by the way, I come from a family of renters. So when you tell me to buy a house, that's something new to me.
Right.
You know, oh, I come from a generation or a group of a family who don't go to doctors. So when you're telling me this, you can't just fix one leg of the table and expect the other three to kind of come together. You really have to get the black men. What's going on with you? And let's try to work with that. Now, let's go on with your friend. He may not have that issue, but some other things. So really talking to black men about specifically what it is. What is it that we can do to get everyone at that table to help everyone? So as President Obama said, still my president, President Obama said, you know, so all ships can rise, you know, at the same time. But we know there's some ships that are just much more well-equipped than others. And how do we get to those smaller ones that really need the help?
So you speak about black men the same way I addressed when I had women and I did It's Time to Heal. There's a holistic approach, right? The four W's that are on this show are all leading to the one W, to be made whole, right? So your worth, understanding your value, your wellness, how are you taking care of yourself mentally, emotionally, physically? How are you making sure that all of that is taken care of? How are you accumulating or building a legacy around wealth? Not how are you getting rich, but how are you building this legacy around wealth? And then once you have wisdom, how do you continue gleaning and giving? Right? That is the journey that I, you know, I'm very conscious of as a black woman with black women. And that journey of It's Time to Heal was, how do we move through this to expose what's wrong, medicate, and then rehabilitate so that you go on to be your best you? Would that be something similar that you would say men, black men need?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of that goes on in barbershops, you know, where we come in and we come in for a cut. But, you know, this is going on.
The sanctuary.
You know, right. You know, my wife, my girlfriend or my children, or I'm trying to do this. And we have that healing process. But, I mean, we have it going here. But one of the things that kind of separates is the whole social media piece. So it allows you to look into my life without me having to give you a whole lot.
Right.
So we have a lot of distance. And one of the powers of the black culture has been the intergenerational learning. So you may have had grandmama in the same house as the family, and they taught you some things, and they were teaching. They were still teaching their grown children some things. And you went down the street, and you had somebody there. But then as folks had to leave the house to work, mom and dad had to work. Both of them had to work, and other folks had to do different things. The intergenerational piece was lost. So now I have a 9-year-old, or I have a 12-year-old, I have a 15-year-old, especially male, trying to figure out what manhood is, when the males in my life may be there, but they're so busy doing some other things, and I don't have the quote-unquote old heads out there showing me what to do. So now I got to piece together what manhood is via videos, music, my other friends, my peer groups. So we're all trying to put this thing together, and that's what I'm going to call manhood.
Right.
And then you pair up with somebody who says, you should have learned that a long time ago. What do you mean you don't know how to do laundry? What do you mean you're not sure? You don't cry. What does that mean? You know, or you don't hug your son. Like, what is that about? You know, because emotionally we can't do that. Well, I just heard that, and I picked that up. And so we have a lot of Carter G. Woodson miseducation of ourselves.
Wow.
Because I'm not sure really who I am, but you don't need a license to have a child. So we're going to let you raise that child, and then with your miseducation, you're going to miseducate that child. Or any other children that may not come from you physically that you have contact with, that you're teaching, and under any relationships you're in. Because every time you're in space with somebody, it's a relationship. So you're teaching them what you know and what you don't know. And if that's called manhood, now I'm going to pick that up and say, oh, well, I saw somebody do that. I saw someone else do that. And you just kind of put this hodgepodge thing together. And then when we talk to black men, honestly, it's either a, nah, that's not how I get down, or nah, 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 nah. Or when you have an honest conversation, it's like, yo, I don't know. And where do you pick up on a 25-year-old, 35-year-old, 45, 55-year-old man who notices there are pieces in my life that weren't there, and how do I get them? How do I ask for help? Mm. Which is a key thing about being a man, asking for help and assistance, as opposed to just, I'll just limp. It'll be all right. I'll be all right. Shake it off.
Well, yeah, that sounds like what y'all do when you know, in the basketball court or the football field. You know, get up.
That's it.
And that man ups up. And that, ugh. So I will talk more about the man up piece, because it was language that I did not allow to be used in my program with Saving Our Boys. Mm-hmm. When the coaches would come with, no, they just need to man up, Miss Lawrence. And I'm like, oh, so what does that mean? Mm-hmm. If you cannot articulate what you want them to correct, you are not allowed to say man up. Mm-hmm. That is not the substitution for everything. You know, because if I hear that correlation of man up, then when the streets tell me to man up and shoot somebody, then that's manning up too. No, you need to define for them what is it that needs to be corrected.
Right.
What do you want them to continue? What do you want them to discontinue? And if you don't pause long enough to get clarity, then you shouldn't say it at all. So, you know, that man up piece. But I want to go back to something you said about barbershop and get Marcus in. Because I remember, because both of you did the Black Male Symposium. Mm-hmm. How do you get the barbershop outside of the barbershop? Because y'all, you know, y'all get in on the barbershop.
Right.
And it's your counseling session, your coaching session, your grieving session, whatever goes on in there. How does that come out of the barbershop?
Well, I think going back to something you said when you were asking the question about, like, what you're doing with the women and where do men get that at? And I would say that, for the most part, black men don't get that. That's one of the advantages black women have is, like, you know, a lot of the black females I know, they have their group of girls, whether it's a positive or negative influence, they got someone to get feedback. They have a sounding board, right? They can be vulnerable with these women, and then they can and really think out loud. As an African American growing up, like I was taught, and I grew up down south, that, you know, you keep it in, you deal with it on your own, you don't show weakness. I was never told that I could be vulnerable, right? The first man that I remember telling me they loved me was my college coach when I was 22, a senior in college when we won the championship, right? And so, and I look back on that and I think about my own kids, I was like, that would be a travesty if my son never hurt me, well, in a given week, hear me say I love you, right? More or less getting to 22 years old. And so I think as black men, we are very sensitive when it comes to our deepest thoughts and feelings. because nobody, that has never mattered to anyone before.
Mm.
And I think, you know, learning how to discern who are those, that group, that circle of black men that you can actually, and not just black men, men period, regardless of, they can be Jewish, they can be white. I just got back from Israel and shared some pretty vulnerable moments with a group over there, and they were all Jewish men, right? But I think, you know, that's that taking the barbershop outside of the four walls, right?
Mm-hmm.
We need to have that those barbershop moments because we have to deal with so much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to understand how the stress of just being a black man impacts us both mentally, emotionally, and physically, right? And so, and then that continues to build on itself. And then you pass that on to your kids, to Kevin's point, because you haven't been guided in the right way. And so I think, you know, to the extent that, you know, as black men, that we can set the example and be vulnerable in front of people. Like I think you said when I was on your show last, Michelle, how vulnerable I was on the show to so many. And a lot of times people say that to me in terms of my leadership style. And I just believe that the reason I'm in the position is to show other black young men and boys that it's okay to be yourself, to say what you like, you know, be smart about it.
Right.
And understand your audience.
Mm-hmm.
But people do not open up to people who don't open up.
Right.
Right. People are just not going to, you're not, they're not going to pour you out gifts if they don't know who you are and what you're about. And so if you want the energies of this universe to come towards you, you have to first open a door that it can get into.
Wow.
And so for me as a black man, like, you're killing me over here, brother. trying to stay focused. but I absolutely, I'm glad you honed in on that barbershop piece, Michelle, because I've been cutting my own hair for 13 years, so I don't go to the barbershop. So.
But, to the men that don't do barbers.
Right, exactly. But I do remember, and I just think that we have to create all these different proverbial barbershops around the personal and professional life that we're living and provide that access to. And I always come from the young African-American boy perspective because I still see myself in some ways as that child who didn't get it, right? Yeah. And so, and that helps me each and every day to think from the perspective of that little African-American boy who was so curious and didn't know what he didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to make sure that I'm providing access points for other African-American young men and boys to be able to, you know, reach their full potential.
So I'm still going to go in a little bit deeper because I love the barbershop talk and how to bring it out. When women, because both of you referenced, well, we have girlfriends, and so the need to talk does not necessarily mean that I am being my most authentic self, as one of my good friends say, or that I am getting the counsel necessary.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to bring a group of black women in, we can say, oh, yeah, we're always on the phone. We're always talking, you know, some.
Right.
It doesn't mean that I have gotten to the heart of the matter. Someone has to say, I'm creating a space to bring you through a journey,
mm-hmm.
right? So that is one of the things that I did. I said, I know what it's like to have friends and to have some conversation, but at the same time, that hurt, that insecurity, the thing that keeps me from being my best me is in the way, and there isn't really a forum for that to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Even as an African-American woman, now you can say that there are workshops on how to build this skill, how to build this talent, how to propel forward in your professional life. That does not get at what's going on with me. And so how do we get black men who understand what's happening in the barbershop to host or to put together or facilitate? Because we have like the Black Male Symposium,
mm-hmm.
right? How do we take black men on this journey? And so that they can come out whole.
Mm. It's like a rites of passage program. But when it's funny as you say that because a lot of times you think rites of passage is always young men. But there are men, grown men, who still need a rites of passage program.
There you go.
And I know for, as black men, sometimes you need like that carrot And, you know, there's a big carrot tonight. There's the game three, NBA. So it's always sports. We could always do sports or something. That's what gets them in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Food always helps.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's always key to have, you don't need a leader, but it's always key to have somebody who's not afraid to be vulnerable. Somebody who says, listen, I went through this. We don't do enough of telling our stories.
Mm-hmm.
Good, bad, and indifferent. I know when I work with college students, oftentimes they just see somebody who's got a college degree. You didn't go through that process. But I know, and the shameless plug to for Center for Male Engagement, we talk about, our director, Derek Perkins, talks about, tell those hard stories. Tell those nights where it was just oodles and noodles and hot dogs.
How about that?
Or just oodles and noodles, you know, or, you know, the struggles that you went through, that it wasn't just an easy process. And then when, like Marcus said, when folks see you as being vulnerable, they feel a little more comfortable opening up on some other things. And then it's really getting to know brothers and say, hey, listen, man, I know you said a couple weeks ago you were looking for a job. How's that working out? Well, you know, I didn't want to say anything, but look, this is judgment free. We need to have a group. Marcus knows some people. I know some people, da, 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 da. Or it's a health issue. Or when's the last time you saw your son? Now, it's only certain brothers can come at certain brothers in that way.
Right.
But that's who you need to have in that room, the people who can keep you honest. And it's not about judgment. It's not about threats.
There it is.
It's not about money. It's just like, look, I just care about you. I just want to see you. It's better to be seen than viewed. So I don't want to get the note that you would just died of stress or whatever. I want to see you. And we have these spaces that it could start small. It could be one, two, and then you just kind of add on. Because, you know, like you said, we could have the little carrots, the food or whatever, the TV shows or whatever. But at some point, we all have to come together and say, listen, we're going to talk. You know, men always, we always afraid when a woman comes up and say, listen, we need to talk. Oh, Lord.
You know? I'm going to address that off the air, ladies. You need not fret.
Yeah.
I will address that off the air.
But when his brother say, yo, let's connect. Let's see what's going on. It could, you know, it start very small. Who's better, LeBron or Kobe, and build right. on. It could be football, whatever. What do you think about Cap? Da, 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 da. And these conversations can be had on the sideline, literally, while you're watching your sons or daughters compete. You got other men there. It's like, hey, what's going on? How you doing? You know, we tend to have these check-in conversations, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
We do a couple jabs. Hey, what's going on? How you doing? All right, then I move on. We got to go a little deeper. We got to be committed to one another to go a little deeper.
And just to add on to that is, and that's on a, that can be an individual group setting, and it doesn't have to be someone that you've known for a lot of years, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times you can have a relationship with a man for 20 years, and there's always, hey, what's going on? You liked the game last night, and it just fly by night, right?
Right, right.
Or you can meet one person and have a transformational 45 minutes with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for men, like, we need more black men who are willing to what I call attunement, right? And that is, you start with responsiveness, right? When you're talking to another a person, making sure that you actually hear what they're saying,
okay.
And then you can make them, through your response to them, know that you just heard them.
Mm-hmm.
The second piece of that is understanding. So now you make them feel like, oh, wow, he understands where I'm coming from. Third is caring. You're showing that affection. Like, you're saying that, listen, I care about what's going on with you.
Mm.
And you can show that through your voice, through your facial expressions, through touch, whatever that is. And then the last piece is, then what do you do after that? Right. And then, so to your point, when you say, hey, brother, you know, I think I got someone to shoot this email, do an email introduction of you and this guy, the CEO that I know, to help you try to get this job. And so through those four things, you have attunement. And that is, this person now feels like I'm validated. You affirmed me.
Yes.
Right. And I don't care what nobody said. Every person on this earth is selfish.
Mm.
Right. At the end of the day, if you understand that, like, and I make this joke at my job. I got 85 employees, right? And I said, if I was to walk out this door today and get hit by a car, the first response is going to be, what are we going to do now? You know what I'm saying? And so once you understand where people are coming from, and the black man is no different, right? I think we live in a world where there's so many competing interests that the black man has taken not the bottom seat, but under the table, right? Like, we're the last thought about, is that person taken care of? Like, you know, Titanic, they put the women and the kids and then the white men on the boat, and they, we don't know what happened to the black man, right? And so, and that's how I feel like in life, like when we talk about any topic, any subject, the last person thought of in that is, are we taking care of the black man?
Mm.
right? Is the black man taking care of the black man? And then you brought up social media. The piece I want to say is, yes, social media is going up and church is going down, right? So young people don't go to church like we used to. And that was the location, the place where I saw men. That was the place where men would pull you to the side and have conversations that they didn't have in the streets or when they would see you walking by, right? And you always, nothing against women, you always saw a man in the pulpit, right? You saw a black man in the pulpit. It was a black leader, and you were just like, okay, like I feel good about who I am because I see a black man every Sunday leading my community, no matter what else is going on. And today we don't have that construct in our communities. The population, the attendance at church has gone down. Mm-hmm. Even the view of church has gone down. And so now we live in this social media world where all these different influences can impact how we think about certain groups. And that was why we started off. I was like, I just want to put this point out and not generalize black men, because we're not doing bad all around. We got some phenomenal African American men.
Absolutely.
Who are doing some amazing work, right? And all of us could call out just 25 of them real quick.
Yes.
Right? But the plurality of us aren't doing as well. Mm. And so in order for us to do that, we have to engage in these conversations.
It's funny you mention that, because Philly is uniquely situated in terms of what it is we do. We've had black mayors. We've had black council people, council presidents, black fire chiefs, police chiefs. We have black men in these positions, and for some reason or another, we haven't had that impact on other black men. Mm. And that's a head scratcher. But also, as you were talking, Marcus, I'm thinking a lot of black men in these positions are in the positions of taking care of other people except for their own communities. So if I'm the mayor, I got to make sure everybody's taken care of. And I can't just focus on black men because, I can't do that. Sure. We saw it with President Obama. You know, you couldn't say anything specifically black. You have a black police chief. The only time they want him to weigh in is when, what are you going to do about this crime? Not setting up or reorganizing PAL so that it's more strategic, so you have black people doing it, black men coming in. A lot of times we have these positions and we have to leave our community or leave our families to take care of other people's families. And then we wonder why guys who look like us aren't doing as well.
Wow.
Well, can I come in on that?
By all means.
I'll frame it a little differently. And
coming at you. Yeah,
no, I know. Right. And I'm not coming at you on this one. I just think that what I look at is, you know, Wilson Good Sr., right, was first black mayor. Mm-hmm. And I think he sparked like a lot of black people getting into those leadership positions you're talking about now, right? And I sat at a table with all of these African-American male leaders over the age of 60 who talked about and were very apologetic of saying that maybe we focused on the wrong thing. We focused on politics, right? And we didn't have a heavy enough focus on economics, right? Mm. And so my slight pivot is that What we set our goal on, we accomplished. We may have set our goal improperly, right? And so, because we thought, and I'm, you know, putting myself into the heads of these leaders from the past, was that if we go and we get the mayor position, we get the DA position, we get these positions, then we got the city and we can help our people, right? Because I have to believe they did it because they wanted to be a good public servant, right? And what they found was, well, you got to have both. Right. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to influence policy. Right. But you also got to have the economics, because for me, my philosophy is politics is just a division of already created goods. Mm-hmm. Economics is creating resources. Right. And so we start to fight amongst ourselves for scarcity and this crabs in the barrel, rather than saying, okay, there's a whole lot of stuff I have here for us to accomplish. This is enough for everybody.
Right.
So now we can raise all ships through that rising tide, because now we are creating jobs. We are creating opportunities for people to go out and build wealth, to build equity, to do those things for the black community. Now you have a city that's mostly ran by black people, at least on the top. But then when you look at corporate America, we only have about 3.5% representation on corporate boards, right? Less than that in terms of in the C-suite levels in these big corporations. But, and even, and we just started to see an increase of black men in the nonprofit world, right? And so I think we, when we set our mind and we're focused on something as black people, that's the danger with us, because other people know that we are powerful, right? And as long as we are scattered, and we're always going to be scattered, in my opinion, until we really coalesce our black men to be the leaders in this community, along with the black women. But we got to get our black men together first, because our, like you said, our black women are women. Females are already ahead of us anyway, right? And so it's like, can you give us some more resources to, and help us to get where we need to be so all of us can rise together? But anyway, that was just my slight pivot.
No, that's great.
Thank you, gentlemen, because, you know, as I'm listening to you describe the thoughts and processes of how our city was, the intentions, the impact, and how we need to now move forward, what I would only add is predecessors, not local to Philadelphia. But if you think about the Dr. Kings and the Malcolm X's, they always had economic equality as a part of the agenda. And in fact, that's what frightened folks so much, is that everyone kept saying, well, Martin, you know, he just wants us to get along and integration. And it was when he said, wait a minute, y'all are not paying attention that I strategically know how to impact revenue.
Right.
These boycotts are not, you know, haphazard. It, the reason the tide changed is because revenue profits were impacted.
Right.
The strategic approach to saying that on Christmas and Easter, which are the most highly revenue generated days in retail, we're just not buying.
Right.
And we understand our purchasing power. So it, there's always been an understanding that the way to fix our folks is to get, is to address the economic equality. That language changed to job creation.
Right. Right. Right.
Job creation and economic equality are not synonyms. They're not synonymous, right?
Right?
So you can create jobs and still not have economic equality.
Absolutely.
Right? You described, okay, Amazon can put X dollars, you know, X in this box, and, you know, I'm making $15 an hour. That is not going to give me the same type of stability or economic equality as if I were fully equipped with education and opportunity and the resources to have purchasing, to better use my purchasing. Because here's the truth, we are still the number one consumer.
Right, right.
Do not be mistaken. Now, our priorities are different, but we're still the number one consumer. So I would, if you understand that that was our history, how then do we use what we understand as economic equality to lift the black man? What needs to happen there?
Wow.
Yeah.
You want me to take that off?
Yeah, this is.
Well, listen, I think first and foremost, education, right? Like, if, like, you know, to your point, like, we are the number one consumer, but we're not producers, right? And producers are entrepreneurs. Producers are creative inventions, right? Like, we're some of the most creative people on this earth from the beginning of time.
Absolutely.
And so we've gotten into this thing where many of us, and I think rightfully so, decided to move to urban centers. And as we began to move to urban centers, we congregated in, together, because we found strength being together, right? And then that made it us easier targets, though, right? And so now we're living in these congregated centers that have poor education, poor resources. We're marginalized. And any time you want to run for a political office or something, you're not going to hear people talking about, we want to help the black people. You're not going to hear that, right? That's not going to get people elected. Michelle, you know that.
Yes.
It's not going to get
Help black people.
Right, right.
Thank you for that.
Exactly. And so if we want our piece of the pie, I was in Israel about 3 weeks ago. And one of the things that I learned that I didn't know was, well, one, that a third of Israeli Jews are atheists. I was blown away by that.
Wow.
But also I learned that many men in Jewish families in Israel don't work. They spend a good bit of their life studying, right?
Yeah.
And then I also learned that right prior to the Holocaust, Hitler put a lot of Jews, he made them go work for banks and things of that nature, because it wasn't seen as, you know, an honorable profession. And then now, you know, 60 years later, 70 years later, You see Jews who are running banks and the World Bank and all of these things. And what that said to me was, like, we need to understand money. You know, we need to make sure our kids understand money. They can do math, mm-hmm. right? And they can read. Mm-hmm. And I said, if we focused on those three things with our kids, then they can have a better future than what they have now, right? We know that kids who do not read by third grade level, their chances of going to jail are infinitely more.
Right.
Right? And so if we don't stop and make sure that our kids get a proper education, a quality education, and then that our parents are empowered and undergird to make sure that they're also teaching their kids at home.
Right.
Right? Because if you're just relying on the school to deliver, to make sure your kid is going to be prepared for this 21st century economy, then you're in trouble.
Right.
Right? And so for me, it all starts with education.
Yeah, it's funny. When we keep talking about 21st century, it's like we're like 19 years into the 21st century, and we're still kind of talking about we got to get ready for the 21st century. And it's like true. If we're waiting for the schools to do it, they're under-resourced. I don't say they don't have funds. It's a whole other thing because I believe if you keep giving people money, it's not that they don't have resources. They just poorly manage their resources. So I push back against the district being broke or whatever, and that's what the issue is. I think oftentimes what we suffer from too is that we become victims of the American or popular culture as opposed to the African, what we now know as black culture. Black culture always focused on family, building, the tradition, like you said, the church, or now it's the mosque, or it had a spiritual base, it had a community based. Popular culture says, get you, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I got mine.
Right.
Go get yours.
Right. And you know, we're going to compare. We're going to this arms race. Okay, you got the new Xbox or whatever. I got to get another one. Mm-hmm. I've got to get this. It's all stuff. We become stuffaholics. That's popular culture. And we don't build anything with popular culture because popular culture has you chasing those who create. So Apple, Amazon, and Google love this culture because it's a chasing, come get what we offer culture. So we have to get back to the economic development creating. I think as an old head, as some of my students call me, we have to be more patient with this generation. This generation interprets entrepreneurship a whole lot differently than we did. Mm-hmm. We're the children of the baby boomers that got the good government jobs, and that's how you do. And we've tweaked that a little bit. You know, we don't stay at a job for 20, 25 years. But we do have that that commitment to our job and the professions and sometimes the companies. The students who are coming up now, we still have to tell them you got to get the paper because it legitimizes you can do what you say you can do. But then they go off on this whole other thing. They're more in touch with a global society than we ever have been because they have those resources. So we have to be patient in terms of what we see as success may not be what they look at as success, but they're successful. So they can start a business out of their mother's basement.
Right.
And it's a legitimate business.
Right.
You know, because Uber is nothing but Uncle Joe's hack.
Right.
You know, the little hack guy who drove you from the supermarket.
Right.
His nephew or godson went to college, wrote an app, and kind of paired them together. But we didn't see it. We didn't see it coming, you know. So it's great ideas. And if we're blind to it, if we say it has to be in a certain way, then we're almost squelching their growth. So part of it is we have to be patient. We got to come at that intergenerational piece. We got to come to the table and say, all right, listen, this is what success looks like in America as a black man. And this is what, as a black man, as a young black man, I'm comfortable with. And then we come together and how do we put this thing together so you are successful? How do we do that? And you can't leave voting out.
Right.
You got to get in there. Because if it didn't matter, you wouldn't be so many people trying to take that from you. So it has to matter. We have to build homes. We have to build communities. You can raise your child and not be in the same house with your child.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can't just say it's all through marriage because we know there's some marriages that just don't work. There's some people who should not be together. There's some people who should not have children. You just got to be honest. I went through a 10-page application to adopt a dog. My wife and I decided to have children. Nobody visited the house to see if we were able to raise the child. So there are people on the block who can raise the child. And you don't have to be in that same house. We have to kind of rethink and get back to community. You know, take the stigma off, they're not together. Or even, you know, the sexuality thing, it's not that. That's the stuff people want us to fight over. Build the community.
So we're missing the village. And that was interesting because that's a conversation we had last week. Now, gentlemen, I have literally 90 seconds, so I'm going to wrap up.
That's all Marcus because I can't do it in 90 seconds.
I can, though. That's why we're not doing the throwback. There'll be no passing on this court. I can't thank both of you enough for having this honest conversation around the state of African American men and what's going on. And again, we know that there were no broad brushes, but to understand this, Marcus, you talked most importantly about how you communicate with one another. So when you listed those steps, all I kept saying is, you know, now I'm taught that through communication, how to be more effective. So black men being more effective with communicating, earnestly listening, not just hearing, because I can hear you and all I'm setting up is my rebuttal, right? But if I'm earnestly listening to you, then I'm giving you all of the behaviors that come with that. Eye contact, a nod, a yes, I got it, which means that I'm important, so that affirmation comes in. Then what I heard from you, Kevin, is don't put words in my mouth. And don't let society dictate who I am. Stop telling me I'm this and I'm that. Let me have a seat at the table where I can speak for myself as a black man, because I understand what matters to me. The other piece that we talked about for a solve, because here on Michelle Speaks, we do look for solves. It's how do we get that barbershop out into a different platform? Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do some more diligent work around creating a safe haven, so that black men can speak, can heal, can grow. And then lastly, what I charge our listeners to do is, you've heard conversation around the closing comments around what we need to get accomplished versus what we have accomplished. Go look at our history. We had villages. We were inventors. We had the first patent. We created the traffic light, the first heart surgery. It was all in us. I can't thank you enough for staying tuned with us today on Michelle Speaks. God bless and keep you until we are able to have another hour next Wednesday. What's going on? Marcus Allen, Kevin Covington. God bless.
But getting back on your feet, walking in your glory. So come on, let's go. Michelle Speaks. Yes, it is. Michelle Speaks. All right, it's time for Michelle Speaks. Ooh, I said Michelle Speaks. Yeah, yeah.